Thank you for the introduction. So today, outlining my presentation, I will give an introduction to tall fescue as well as tall fescue toxicosis. My research objectives cover my methods for my research, give some results, and then tell some conclusions and take any questions. So tall fescue is the most popular perennial cool season grass in the United States, and it is grown on approximately 14 million hectares nationwide. I've included a map here of the United States where tall fescue is adapted for growth. The areas in black are where it's adapted for minor use, and then that area in red around Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, those areas, those are where it's adapted for more major use. And then you'll see in that area, that green dashed line, areas south of that is where the tall fescue, it's necessary for endophyte to be grown inside that for persistence. So tall fescue and the endophyte, tall fescue is infected with endophyte Epicloe sinophyla. So this endophyte I've included in that picture in the bottom in the blue grows between the cells of the plant and produces ergot alkaloids. So these ergot alkaloids, the most common and the most negative for livestock is ergovaline. So when you combine all three of these, the endophyte, the toxins, and the tall fescue, you get a plant that has good tolerance to overgrazing, drought, heat stress, cold temperatures, low soil fertility, and poor drainage, as well as insect herbivory. So there's three different tall fescue endophyte associations. The first one, which I've covered a little bit already, is the toxic. So this is where the plant contains the wild type endophyte, which results in good plant persistence, but because of the toxins that are produced, has harmful effects to livestock. So as a result, researchers removed the toxic endophyte and developed endophyte-free tall fescue. This tall fescue did not have any negative effects to livestock because there was no ergot alkaloids produced because the endophyte was not present. But it was then discovered that without the endophyte present in the plant, there was poor plant persistence. So researchers reinfected the tall fescue plant with a beneficial or novel endophyte. In this variety of tall fescue endophyte association resulted in good plant persistence because it contained the endophyte and also had no harm to the livestock because this endophyte does not produce the toxins, ergovaline and the ergot alkaloids. So all these negative effects in cattle, I've summarized them into two different categories. The first is health. So these are vasoconstriction, where the blood vessels dilate in the animal, causing poor circulations in their hooves and tails. In extreme conditions, they can lose their hooves. This is called fescue foot. Also lose their tail switch. The next is immunosuppression, where they just have an overall poor immune system. Thermoregulation, this is where the animals can't control their body temperature. So in the summers, they suffer from heat stress, and in the winters, they suffer in the cold conditions. They also have increased respiration rate, altered fat metabolism, and then a change in the hormone balance. Specifically, serum prolactin levels is what I had been looking at in some of my research. And I've included an image here of some cattle. It's a little bit harder to see, but that are suffering from tall fescue toxicosis. You'll notice that the one animal is covered in mud. That's because that animal was laying in what water it could find to try to cool off. This picture was actually taken in the summer. So the next of the two categories is production. So this would be stuff like a decrease in intake of the animal. Also lower weight gains, lower weaning weights, poor reproduction, low milk production, and then also lower body condition scores. And when you combine all of these things together, It is estimated that it costs U.S. livestock producers approximately $2 billion annually. So the research that I'm going to present today, my objectives were to determine the difference in cow-calf performance when grazing Bar Optima plus E34 or Kentucky 31 tall fescue, and also to determine if a forage accumulation differs between Bar Optima plus E31 and Kentucky 31 tall fescue. For my methods, I had tall fescue pastures, either Bar Optima plus E34, which I will from now on refer to as just Bar Optima. This was the novel endophyte tall fescue, which was, we tested, and it was 82 plus or minus 2% endophyte infected. Then the other was Kentucky 31, which was the wild type or toxic endophyte infected tall fescue, and it was 92 plus or minus 4% endophyte infected. There were six pastures, which were 3.6 hectares each, and then we divided those pastures into eight paddocks per pasture. We had five cow-calf pairs on each pasture, giving us a total of 30 cow-calf pairs per year. The project went for 3 years, and we utilized rotational stocking, where hay was harvested as needed in the spring. And this was a completely randomized design. So the pasture mass we measured weekly with an ultrasonic bike reader. We would then utilize these values to make grazing and pasture decisions for the week. We grazed from spring to fall. The animals would go onto the pastures in the spring when there was enough forage to sustain grazing, which was usually early April to fall, which was usually mid-November, late November, when there was no longer forage available. And then during that time in the summers, if pastures could not sustain grazing, we would feed back the hay that we had produced on those pastures back during the summer. The animal mass was then measured every 28 days. And I analyzed the data using proglimics in SAS 9.4. And then my significance level was set at 0.05. So for some of my results, first is calf performance. The first number here I have is spring average daily gain. This was a value that we was from the beginning of grazing to weaning. So you'll notice that the animals on Bar Optima gained 0.4 kilograms per head per day more than Kentucky 31. So the animals on Bar Optima had a significantly higher average daily gain. The 205-day adjusted weaning mass was also, you see, significant increase in adjusted weaning mass on Bar Optima versus Kentucky 31. And then the amount of beef produced, this is the value, the amount of weaned mass divided by the number of hectares. So what we saw was that Bar Optima produced 333 kilograms per hectare of beef, and then the animals on Kentucky 31 had 290 kilograms per hectare, which was significantly different. And these numbers, these were just on 2 years, the second and third year of data. With the cow values, we utilized all 3 years of data on this. So what we saw is for spring average daily gain, again, Bar Optima animals gained significantly more than the Kentucky 31 animals. You'll see Bar Optima animals gained 1 kilogram per head per day, where the Kentucky 31 averaged just 0.2. And then in autumn, you'll notice that there was a significant difference between Bar Optima and Kentucky 31, where the Bar Optima animals had no change in weight gain, but the animals on Kentucky 31 lost 0.2 kilograms per head per day. And so those average daily gains utilized some of these values here. So you'll notice, or what I did for the cow mass, I standardized the cow mass at the beginning across all 3 years. So these values are what you see is that in Bar Optima, the weaning mass of the cows were significantly higher than those cows grazing Bar Optima. Also, then similarly, in pre-calving, animals on Bar Optima, cows on Bar Optima were significantly greater than Kentucky 31. And then between pre-calving and end-of-autumn grazing, those animals produced a calf. There was no significant difference in the birth weight of the calves produced. So what we see is there was no change between the Bar Optima animals and the pre-calving to end-of-autumn. That was that autumn grazing or average daily gain value that I just mentioned. But then there was, so then again, in at the end of grazing in the autumn, we saw a significant difference between Bar Optima and Kentucky 31. And then in the forage production, so I mentioned we used the ultrasonic bike reader. We utilized those values to determine forage accumulation, which there was no significant difference between the Bar Optima and Kentucky 31 pastures on the forage accumulation. But there was a significant difference in the hay balance. So what we saw was there was 424 kilograms per hectare hay that was remaining with Kentucky 31, but we had a deficit with Bar Optima of 511 kilograms per hectare. And then finally, the animal grazing days, we saw a significant difference with Kentucky 31 having more animal grazing days than Bar Optima animals. So in conclusion, Bar Optima provided greater calf production outputs. Bar Optima also resulted in greater cow mass at weaning, pre-calving, and end-of-autumn grazing. The forage accumulation did not differ between Bar Optima and Kentucky 31, and Kentucky 31 pastures had a surplus of hay compared to the deficit with Bar Optima. The grazing days per hectare was lower on Bar Optima compared to Kentucky 31, and it is likely that the reduced number of grazing days resulted from the uninhibited consumption of Bar Optima compared to those Kentucky 31 pastures. And with that, I will take any questions. Thank you. So the question was, is if there was any difference in persistence between the novel and the toxic tall fescue. For my research specifically, I didn't notice much difference. We were establishing the Bar Optima pastures towards the beginning of the study, so we saw some, you know, we were trying to get the plant developed early on. I didn't see much difference in persistence, but the toxic plants just seem to be a little more persistent just because the animals don't graze them as readily. You know, the Bar Optima plants, the animals will graze them lower than the toxic ones. Yes. So the question was would it be a issue if you planted the Bar Optima with the toxic fescue around. So if there wasn't a good divide or a large area between the two, the toxic would tend to encroach on the non-toxic tall fescue varieties just because of the extra persistence that's seen due to the toxins or the toxic varieties. Yes. So the question was, how often were the measurements for forage accumulation taken? So we measured the pastures each week on Monday. So every week we had the ability to calculate a growth rate. I used a neural network to determine the forage accumulation then based on those values. We would then calibrate it with some harvest monthly, and that was how the forage accumulation was then determined.
Sorry, but we gotta keep going. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.